It is a truth universally acknowledged that a single man in possession of a good fortune must be in want of a wife.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a new podcast bringing you the updates you really want over all those book recommendations your friends send you and the stuff you see on TikTok. I'm Casey.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Catherine. So we are just three friends who met in Kansas City and wanted to stay connected. So we created this podcast about our combined love of books and how much we really wanted to talk about them with each other and have our own Busy Girls Book Club, because we are extremely busy young professionals and we want to share this love with y'all.
For the third episode, we're going to take you back in time to the Regency era. And no, it's not Bridgerton, but Pride and Prejudice.
Now, Bridgerton's trendy right now, and I feel like it sparked some reinterest in Pride and Prejudice, which is why we're tackling this today. Yeah. So, if you haven't had to read this in school or picked it up on your own, here is a quick summary for you. This is a Jane Austen novel that centers around the Bennet family, and more specifically, Elizabeth Bennet. She is the second eldest of five daughters, all of whom are unmarried, and whose mother desperately wants them to marry rich so that they are not destitute. So Jane Austen takes us on a windy adventure to finding love for the Bennet sisters. And in the process of it, you meet Mr. Darcy, who is the main male character, and who kind of, quite frankly, comes off as an ass for most of the book. And it's about actually three of the Bennet sisters, you know, their love affairs, but, you know, in like old timey England. So it's not anything like steamy. It's just really cute.
Basically, he's got pride, she's got prejudice, and that's the novel.
See, I think we should debate this because I feel like it's the other way around.
Really?
Interesting.
Okay, we'll get into it.
Yeah. But first things first, we are gonna go over some reviews that we found that we either loved or hated or just funny about the book. You guys want to go first?
I can go because I really like this review. It's quite long, so bear with me, but I figured that it needed to be the entire length. So Steven on Goodreads gave this 5 stars. But he actually gave it 6, according to his review. So, confession, this book gave me an earth-shattering Jane Austen-gasm. And I'm feeling a bit spent and vulnerable at the moment, so please bear with me. You see, I decided I wanted to be more literated by reading the classicals in between my steady flow of science fiction, mystery, and horror. The question was where to begin. After 2-city tailing, I decided to give this book a whirl as I kept seeing it on GR lists of goodest books ever. However, I must admit I was hesitant going into this for 2 big reasons. 1, I thought it might be a bit too romantical for me. The second, and much more distressing, reason was that Twilight was on many of the same lists as this book. Austen fans should pull a nutty over that one. Needless to say, I went into this thinking I might hate it. Well, for the 999,987th time in my life, at least according to my wife's records, I was wrong. I absolutely loved this book and had a mammoth raging hard-on for it from the opening scene at the breakfast table when Father Witty, Mr. Bennet, is giving sly sarcasm to Mrs. Mommy Put-Upon. I metaphorically could not get enough of the story. I was instantly captivated by the characters, and Elizabeth Bennet, the main protagonist, immediately became one of my all-time favorite characters. Mr. Darcy joined that party as soon as he showed up in the narrative, as I thought he was terrific as well.
Period.
This person's speaking a whole nother language, man.
I know. Yeah. Some of those words, I was like, that's not a word, but okay.
Yeah.
I love them. I love them, though.
I admire the enthusiasm. I thought I was a Jane Austen lover. Would not say she ever gave me a hard-on, but respect.
So I think he said heart-on, but it's so similar that it's
enunciate.
It sounds like, yeah.
I was like,
A little dirtier than it needed to be.
Sorry about that, guys, but heart on.
Yeah, I guess I have.
Save it for Sarah J. Maas, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, well, opposite of Catherine, mine's really short, but it made me giggle. So this is a 5-star review on Storygraph by Margot Babichev. And it's in all lowercase just to really emphasize why I liked this. Been reading for ages. Finally finished. Cried. They're so happy. Loved. That's it.
That is an excellent summary.
Really accurate, though.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Our whole podcast could actually just be that. Like, that's really all we've got to say, I think.
Cried. Loved.
Okay, I'm going to mix it up. I'm doing a negative one. I love this one because it's about the first sentence of the novel, which is very iconic, and which was also the quote that we read at the beginning. Thanks, Caitlin. And this guy just kind of goes in on the quote, so I'll read you what he says. This book begins with the famous line, "It is a truth universally acknowledged that a single man in possession of a good fortune must be one of a wife." How clever, how droll, how ironic, because we all know that is not a truth. It is not universally acknowledged that a single man in that state are not necessarily in want of a wife. We can't wait to see how the book unfolds, how Miss Austen is going to give the lie to that preposterous opening line.
So did he not read the book?
I'm going to guess this man is single.
Probably. The rest of his review was just about how the romance is basic and the characters are basic. Like, this person just didn't find the book exciting, which I completely disagree with. But I just thought that was so funny that they were so offended by this opening line, which was written to pertain to like the 1800s society. And he's like going off on it.
It's also satirical. Like, the whole point of that line is like, yeah, it's satire.
It's sarcastic. It's funny.
I think it has to take a real Jane Austen stan to appreciate the old-timey sarcasm, because there's so much of it in the book that I didn't catch like the first time I read it in like middle school. I don't know what kid reads the classics for fun in middle school, but I did. And, you know, reading it later in life, I was like, oh my gosh, this is hilarious.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of the negative reviews I read, I felt like were either people who didn't really get her witticism or did not have the patience, because Jane Austen is a chatty lady. She writes it all down.
It's monologue-based writing. The characters talk for a real long time.
Yep.
You know, but I'm a fan, but, and so are Goodreads and Amazon readers, because the overall Goodreads rating is 4.28 out of 5 stars. And the overall Amazon review rating is 4.6 out of 5, which I'm not sure I've ever seen a book that like unanimously high.
Yeah, so that's awesome. Yeah, that was out of 20,000 reviews.
Right. So people are fans, as are we. I'm going to go ahead and give it a 5.
Me too.
Me too. Straight five. Shocking. yeah, so do you guys want to sum up what the book is about? Is that where we're on now? Are we just talking about if we liked it?
I mean, I personally think I love this book because, especially at this age, I am the age of Elizabeth Bennet. I am single, and some may think hopeless. And I'm hoping a Mr. Darcy walks into my life. And I'm sorry, it's a classic. If you didn't know that that's how the book ends at this point, that's on you.
I don't even think we need a spoiler warning. There have been like 30 adaptations of this book in movie form, in book form, in TV series, web series. Like, everyone should know the ending of this by this point.
Exactly. I think I love the book because, personally, one of my favorite parts is Elizabeth's relationship with her father, and I love their family dynamics and how the story is about the family In addition to the romance, I also just love that Elizabeth Bennet is so strong and sassy. I always love a female character who is strong and sassy. So,
yeah, and it's groundbreaking for an 1813 writer to write like this strong, sassy woman and make. I mean, I don't know if she made a lot of money in her time, but postmortem for sure, it's a classic, and like it's just such a like real novel. And Jane Austen does this really well, where she just writes real people. Like it feels like a real family that could be living down the street from you. In this time period, I'm not saying today, but putting in context of the time period, and like when you read it, you really feel transported into like this mundane real life of this person, but also going on this fantastic romance journey with like the three different sisters. It's just chef's kiss.
And I think it's especially relatable for so many people because Elizabeth Bennet is in no way a damsel in distress looking for her Prince Charming. And Mr. Darcy is in no way Prince Charming. He's kind of the rich jerk down the street who occasionally graces people with his presence. So I love how, I guess this would be one of the questions we normally discuss, plot-driven or character-driven? And my bet would be on character-driven for this one because it's all about how they grow and change and fall in love.
Yep.
Yeah. That's the Pride and the Prejudice, is how they kind of deal with those traits and their flaws and eventually come together. So yeah. I would agree.
Yeah, it's for sure character driven. The character drives the plot and their whirlwind romance.
Okay. My Jane Austen stance. I think I'm in the minority here. I've only read one other Jane Austen book in completion. No. So what about you guys? Are you fans of further writings by Dear Jane?
Oh, I am indeed. I'm a huge fan. I'll just spoil Catherine. She owns every book written by Jane Austen. And so when me and Catherine were roommates, we all started reading all of them. So I've read all of them except for one.
Yes, I've read all of them except for, I think, two, technically. I haven't read Sense and Sensibility or Persuasion, which I should read Persuasion because I just watched the movie and I feel dirty doing that.
Yeah, I will say, just a slight tangent, Persuasion is my least favorite of hers, but it's also one of her shortest, so.
And meanwhile, I've owned them all in one big combo book for years. And haven't tackled it, so oops.
It's literally such
the a opening shame. Couple chapters of Sense and Sensibility, great.
I am such a Jane Austen stan, it's ridiculous. I would actually say like Pride and Prejudice is Jane Austen's most celebrated work, but it's not her best novel. I will say that.
I say it's Emma.
I think Emma is her best, and I actually think Northanger Abbey is like grossly underappreciated.
Yeah, agreed.
But we don't need to get into a whole conversation about her.
Okay, well, I think one thing that turns a lot of people off from tackling her novels is like their length and the fact that they're written in older English. So what's the pacing like for anyone who's now maybe intrigued by our conversation or wants to get on the Bridgerton train? How long does it take to read? Like what is your best guess there?
Her books are not for the faint of heart. I'll say that. It takes a minute to get used to it. It's definitely a book where you have to kind of like teach your brain how to read it. It's also like you definitely need to keep in mind written before the internet, before television, before modern society. So the style is very different and they're not in a rush. It's not like today's novels. So it's like action, 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 action. Things are very much based in conversation, which is just a lot slower to read.
Yeah. And all of Austen's novels are written in volumes. So there's like volume 1, 2, 3. Normally, it's normally three volumes. So like you will have like volume 1 that goes through a sort of mini climax and then comes back down and then volume 2. So there will be slow parts in between each of the volumes that are like setting up for the next climax. So it's definitely, it takes a while to read. Like even me who like can read a book in a day, it took me probably a week to read this book the first time.
Yeah, it also took me a week, I think.
It probably took me longer the first time, but the second time, yeah, it was more enjoyable. I think once you get over the fear of tackling a classic, it's much easier to get into like just the rhythm of it, and then it's much more enjoyable.
Yeah, I'd agree. But yeah, so this book is probably one of the most adapted of all time. Outside of Shakespeare, Jane Austen is probably one of the most adapted authors of all time. So have you guys seen adaptations? What's your take? Do you like the book or the adaptations? What about that?
Oh my gosh, there's so many of them. I've even watched some of the Hallmark ones. I'm not proud of it. There's like one about dogs and a dog show.
Oh no.
It's bad. It's really bad. But I appreciate Pride and Prejudice so much that I can shamelessly watch those. But I loved the 2005 movie with Keira Knightley. Freaking amazing. She is beautiful. The Darcy there is like the perfect Darcy of like aloofness and like,
And he's not like stinking hot or anything. Like
no,
it's
like he's very
normal
normal
dude.
looking. Yeah, it's
Yeah.
perfect, which is what Darcy's supposed to be. It's Wickham that's supposed to be hot, and
Yeah,
he's
he's
supposed to
not
be
in the
more.
movie, in my opinion, but
No, he's
whatever.
not hot in the movie at all. But in the book, he's described as hot. Well, Darcy's like less so, but like he has the intelligence and the character to back up his looks. So, I mean, I love that movie so much. That is like.
Think the best thing about that movie is it really colorfully brings the Bennet family to life in front of your eyes that you don't necessarily get from just reading the words on paper. But I'm gonna take a hard left here and tell you one of my favorite adaptations is actually Pride, Prejudice, and Zombies.
It's so good. No, it actually is good.
Wait,
The
the book or the movie adaptation?
I've only seen the movie, but
movie.
I was
Okay.
so entertained.
Yeah.
It's still accurate to the book with the bonus of zombies.
Yeah.
I did read the book remake, The Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, and it sucked. It was like the worst knockoff literature ever because they had to rewrite it and they didn't write it with skill. And so it sucked and I hated it so much. But I've actually heard that before about the movie, which I'm a little salty about because I'm such a loyalist to like the Keira Knightley movie. Like I am obsessed with it as well.
I will say Lily James does a great job as Elizabeth Bennet, although she's way too pretty for Elizabeth Bennet, just gonna say that. But and the Darcy's not as good. The Dar like D Darcy brings it down a bit, but it's a good like just like you want to like clear your mind a bit, but you still want like Jane Austen. You get some zombies with it. It's actually a good movie, I actually think.
Highly entertaining, and you still get the premise.
It's the same monologues, the same words. It just adds zombies.
It's still old-timey England. It's just zombies.
Yeah, like you'll hear lines from Pride and Prejudice in the
Yeah.
movie, and you're like, wait a
Do I
second.
normally like zombie or horror movies? No, only when it's Jane Austen.
Well, because I think the funniest part of that movie is the first proposal scene by Darcy in the Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. They're having a full-on like knife fight with each other. And it's so good. It makes it so much better.
Oh my gosh. Well, hot take or pro tip, check out Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. So, who are y'all's favorite characters? What are your favorite moments and lines? Break it down.
My favorite, well, I love Elizabeth, obviously, but I think Mr. Bennet is like the funniest character in the whole book, and how he is just like, he's so on Elizabeth's side about everything and is so sweet to his wife while also being so satirically critical of her. He is like the comedy relief in a lot of the book. So I really appreciate Mr. Bennet.
Yeah, he is also my favorite, which I kind of mentioned earlier. Like, I just love the sarcasm that he brings, and his relationship with Lizzie, I feel like, is also really relatable. Like, even though he's a very funny character, I feel like I have a similar relationship to him with my dad. And so, one of my favorite lines in the whole book is when Mrs. Bennet is desperate to have Lizzie marry their like idiot cousin. And Mr. Bennet and, you know, Mrs. Bennet is trying to force Lizzie to say yes. And Mr. Bennet is like, either way, you lose one of your parents. Like, if you say no, you lose your mother. And if you say yes, you lose me. And I was just like,
oh. Daddy's heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like him. I have some qualms with him towards the end. He's great up until a point to me, just because of like letting Lydia go on that trip with the colonel is a very like, he was kind of an absentee father, if I'm being completely honest. And it shows, especially when like, I think they're like the gardeners or something were trying to find Lydia and Wickham, and he leaves halfway through the thing, and then Darcy ends up finding him.
I think in that era, a lot of fathers, it was pretty normal to be fairly absentee. He was probably more than most.
Yeah, it's just from what I noticed and from like what I'm reading in reviews, that did seem to be like a theme, and maybe Austin purposely did that, or that was just what a father was back then. But that's just what I noticed about it.
Yeah, hands-off parenting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Lizzie does critique him for that as well. She gets really mad at him at one point in the book after they realize what's happened to Lydia, because Lizzie told them that they should not let her go, and it's obvious that they shouldn't have let her go. But it kind of makes me appreciate him more in a way, because he is a flawed person. Like, I would describe his like worst traits as being like playing favorites. Like, he loved Lizzie, and so he was very invested in Lizzie, but he didn't care as much about some of his other daughters. But I also do think that was normal at the time. Like, in this period of England, like, parents hardcore played favorites. Like, they had children that they liked more than others. So I'm like, yeah, he's not a perfect dad, but I really did like him still.
Yeah.
Can I state an unpopular opinion? My least favorite character is Jane.
Not that unpopular.
She just is such a damsel in distress, and she's so wishy-washy.
Yeah.
And she just, I know she's like Elizabeth's confidant and best friend, and like, but she just kind of annoys me.
She's too demure and too shy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, my favorite, this is definitely a popular opinion because she's supposed to be hated, but it's Lydia. Like, she just drives me crazy. Like, and I know like she's supposed to be the immature, annoying little sister, but I just relate so much more to Elizabeth. Like, that's always more of a kind of a person I've been, that like even reading Lydia just stresses me out and like makes me agitated. Like, she's so annoying.
Yeah, I feel like this is an opinion that for my least favorite character that some people agree with, but like at the same time, I feel bad for not liking her, but I don't like Charlotte Lucas. Because she marries Mr. Collins, and like she just stands up for like all of like what society expects of women, and I just don't appreciate it. I understand that she's like a plot device essentially to show that like, I don't know, marriage and like societal expectations, but.
See, I disagree though. I like her because I feel like she has this ruthless practicality. Like, she had to get married or be destitute, basically.
Yeah, she was a realist.
Yeah, and so I don't see her role as like supporting what society is about. I feel like it's a normal person doing their best to make a life. Yeah, which I respected about her, because she wasn't a victim, even though she was of the time period that she couldn't achieve better.
I also don't like Mr. Collins, so maybe that's why, by association.
Yeah.
He provides some of the funniest parts of the book. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Well, the Mr. Collins in the movies because of the comedic relief. Because the comedic relief is so funny, but like the books, I just wanted to skip past his part.
That is really funny because I actually hate him more in the movies. Like, his whole annoying energy is like more aggravating to me when I can like hear it. In the book, I feel like I can appreciate more how other characters react to him without him being as annoying.
Well, I guess it's time to officially give our busy girl ratings for this book. Who wants to go first?
If you don't got time, don't start it. But please start it. It's hefty, and it takes some getting used to the language. So it's not one you can just pick up and put down, really. So if you're super busy, wait till vacation and read it on a beach, but definitely read it.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. If I had to give it a number, I honestly, and this hurts my heart, I would probably give it a 3 out of 5. But
I'd probably give it like a 2.
Yeah, it's just because there's so much talking that you'll forget what happened. You have to read it all at once, just like you were saying. But you can't read it that fast. So if you're really busy, it's just not a great pick.
Yeah, I agree. I'd give it a 3-2, which hurts my heart because it's just so good. It's definitely a wait until you have some free time, some vacation time, some bath time, like maybe some bubble bath and reading. And it's definitely going to take a little bit of time, but it's definitely something you should read if you haven't yet. It's so good.
So if we haven't spoiled it enough already, because you've probably seen the movie if you haven't read the book, we're going to go into even further detail now. So I want to start with one of the issues I have with the book is how these girls are like burned by these guys. And then they're like, wait, but now I'm sad, even though I've only talked to him like a couple times over the period of like a year. And then he comes back and asks for her hand in marriage again. And then she's like, okay. That does bother me a little bit. I know Catherine's making a face, but it happens to both Jane and Elizabeth. They change their minds.
For Jane, totally agree. For Elizabeth, I think because we get her
thoughts. I understand why she did it, but I was like, you barely know the dude.
But like,
which is kind of fast for me.
I mean, like, if you think about it, it's slower than most in that era.
Well, yeah.
So I guess, is Elizabeth overall consistent in her actions?
I agree. She changes her mind a little bit quickly. I do think that part of the novel could have been like a little bit more fleshed out. But I still think there's enough there to support it, especially given the time period when some people got married, like never having even met each other. Some people got married after 3 days. It's like, I just feel like it was a totally different reason why you said yes to marrying someone.
I guess the other thing is, not only does she flip on Mr. Darcy, but it's like she judged him immediately because of things Mr. Wickham said. And then she was like, oh, Mr. Wickham's great. And then Mr. Darcy's like, no, he's not. She's like, okay, no, he's not. Like, do some research, girl.
I mean, like, for the time period, that was research.
Know,
the fact that he gave her that letter.
And gossip in that time period. But, like, why don't you just ask, you know?
Well, she did get kind of burned by Wickham.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely, like, reflected that his character might not be what she thought it was. And I do feel like she wasn't completely on board until she also found out some other stuff. Like, he had not paid back merchants in the town and left without paying. And so I feel like those things also like helped support her change of heart, especially because this is one of the big reasons why I kind of excuse her change on Mr. Darcy being so quick, is because of Wickham and like her like understanding a different narrative of what happened there, like really changed. You know, she realized that she was wrong in a lot of ways. And so I'm like, that would make you like really reconsider someone.
Yeah. And I think like they live on opposite sides of the country, essentially. Like you're never going to see them except for like when the, like the meet cute happens after the first proposal at Pemberley. So like, when are they going to have the opportunity to like talk post them being in her town?
Well, they could like write letters or something.
That takes months. That takes so long.
They don't even do that though. Anyway. Like, I love the love story. I love it. I just wanted to play devil's advocate a little here and, like, be like, that was my one kind of issue. And here's where I'm going to put in my opinion on who's Pride and who's Prejudice. I think, contrary to what some people may believe, Elizabeth is the prideful one. She thinks she doesn't need this guy coming into her life, like she's self-sufficient, and she has this like predetermined idea of him. But I think he's prejudiced because he intentionally breaks up Jane's love affair with Mr. Bingley and doesn't pursue Elizabeth immediately because of her family. He's prejudiced against their poverty and their outspokenness.
I can appreciate that interpretation. You made some valid points there. I'm impressed. If I was an English teacher, I would give you an A. I would still adhere, I think, to the traditional interpretation of Pride and Prejudice, but I don't hate that.
Yeah, because he's like, he's prideful of his station in life and like his high society, high class. And I do agree he has some prejudices, but I think she's more prejudiced because of he hurt her own pride. And so then she, from that point on, anything he does, she's prejudiced against him.
To argue your points, so.
But like in the sense of like the full fleshed out, who is the most of what? I think he's more prideful and she's prejudiced because of his actions, because he hurt her vanity.
Good food for thought. Let's post this one in the group chats, in the all our messaging. I want to hear everyone else's take on it.
Yeah, absolutely. So did you guys find the characters likable? Are they people you'd want to meet? We have discussed this a little bit already, but
I want to meet Elizabeth. I really do.
I want to be Elizabeth.
That too.
Yeah.
I do not want to meet Mrs. Bennet or Mr. Collins in no way, shape, or form.
Or Wickham. Wickham's a fuckboy. No. We're good.
Lydia or Kitty, pass. the crazy rich aunt.
Catherine Dubrow.
Yeah. I mean, I think half the book is Elizabeth overcoming all these people around her. So, no, do I want to meet those people? No, but would I like to meet the rest of them? Yeah.
Wholeheartedly agree. It's definitely a book of a cast of characters. So I feel like people are very polarizing. Like they're either really likable and relatable or they're like extremely annoying. And so I'm like, five of the characters would love it. Five of the characters would rather die.
Yeah, for sure. Like, don't want to meet Mr. Collins. Nope. But Darcy, Bingley, Elizabeth, Mr. Bennet, like I would meet all of them.
Mm-hmm. So my favorite question of all time, how does this novel relate to feminist literature?
This was a groundbreaking novel for that time period. A strong, independent female who is not just looking for a rich guy to marry. I love that. And I think it's a classic because it's still relatable.
Yes, I completely agree. Like Elizabeth is someone who is portrayed as like not only smart, but like smarter than the vast majority of the men she's around. And another one of my favorite parts of the novel is when her dad talks about how smart she is. And he's like, you can't just have anyone, like you need someone who's your intellectual equal. And that is an idea that we love today as part of Western society, but was really new at the time, that like a woman could be an intellectual equal to a partner. Like, and so that's something that I've always just like loved so much about the book.
Yeah, no, it's Elizabeth is ahead of her time in every way, shape, and form. And even I think she's probably the most progressive character of Jane Austen as a woman. I mean, you can make some arguments for Emma, but she's pretty entrenched in society, so I don't think that's true. But I think Elizabeth is probably her most feminist character.
But I think it's important to have like Charlotte in there to balance her out, because the thoughts do creep into our minds, you know, like, will I find my person one day? I'm getting older. Not that it matters as much in society these days, but like the thought crosses your mind as a woman in her mid to late 20s, like, would I like to find someone? Yeah, that'd be nice. But like, do I need a man? No, I'm not all Charlotte. But, you know, I think it's good to have the balance in there. Now, to the extreme of Mrs. Bennet, no. But, you know, you got to get all aspects of a woman of the time period.
And there's definitely still Lydias in this world.
Yes. Not to pick me girl, like, I'm better than Lydias. But yeah, I mean, I think that's part of what makes the novel realistic, is that you can't just have everything be all like hashtag empowerment. It has to still be real life.
Yeah. And Jane Austen is the queen of realism. She is the queen of writing mundane but beautiful things. And everyone can relate to her novels, and it transcends time, which is just something that doesn't happen with novels, especially like a lot of the older novels written by men don't always transcend time because they don't have complex female characters or complex male characters. Well, she writes complex male characters as well, which is just super impressive.
Yeah, I appreciate that the woman in this book is more than just a mom or a wife. Like, you get all aspects of the female person in here. And, you know, you've got the rich, rich old lady who has her own money. And then you've got Mrs. Bennet, who just wants the best for her daughters, to an unbearably painful point. But I like that there's all aspects represented here, despite the expectations of the time period.
And I do actually love to, like, I think some modern day feminists would critique the fact that, like, it's still a love story. She still does end up, like, you know, fulfilling this, like, romance. But that's something that I really like about it, is because to be strong and independent, you don't always have to be alone. Like, you should be with someone who, like, honors who you are and supports you as you are, but you don't need to be, like, alone to be independent and still be, you know, a strong, empowered woman. And so I was like, oh, I love that. I love romance.
Right. You need to meet your equal. And I think that's the most beautiful part of the love story, is like, he is her equal. Bingley is Jane's equal. Like, it's about finding your equal.
Yeah.
Because Lydia is equal.
Lydia and Wickham, that's a whole nother topic. Just what the hell. So this is actually something I found out through researching for this podcast, is that it wasn't originally called Pride and Prejudice. It was called First Impressions. So what do y'all think about that? Obviously, it's definitely accurate to the novel. There's a lot of first impressions in this novel, but do you prefer that or Pride and Prejudice?
I obviously prefer Pride and Prejudice. I mean, the alliteration, it's become so iconic. It's hard to just not love, like, the whole brand of Pride and Prejudice. And it's become such an iconic name. I can't imagine supporting anything else. But First Impressions would also have been, like, a very accurate title for the story, so.
I think First Impressions makes me a little more forgiving of the fact that they change their minds so frequently, because that's the point, is First Impressions, you know, don't judge a book by its cover, you know, the cliches. But I'm the same. Pride and Prejudice is just so much better, a deeper meaning, and I love alliteration.
Yeah. I think First Impressions is just too on the nose, because like, you have First Impression of Darcy, First Impressions of Bingley, of Wickham, of
the Bennet them,
family. Yeah, the Bennet family, them seeing them as a first impression, like, everyone meeting each other and making assumptions based off of societal expectations. But it's just too on the nose. And Pride and Prejudice, again, the alliteration is just perfect.
Journalists love a good alliteration.
We do. And the rule of threes. If you get three in a row, three things listed in them, you got us.
Facts.
So, speaking of first impressions, one I get that doesn't totally change from the initial first impression is Mrs. Bennet. And I mean, I don't think my impression of her changes throughout the book, but I think my understanding of her does. So what are your thoughts on the big, bold Mrs. Bennet? Is she just looking out for her daughters? Is she annoying and dramatic? Like, what's the thought on this one? Because I feel like she's actually a fairly complex character when you think hard about it.
Her poor nerves. nerves, and her husband treats her as he does and makes fun of her, but she's a lot to handle. I think she's overly dramatic in trying so hard to get her daughters married off, because she knows what happens in society when their fathers die and it's an all woman, so they don't have a brother to take over, so it would be a cousin taking over the estate. Like, she knows, like, the harsh realities of society, so I can give her points for that, but she just goes too far. She's embarrassing. Like, it's just, don't love her.
I will point out a moment of devil's advocacy here. It works.
Fact, it does. Okay, I have kind of an interesting answer to this question, because Mrs. Bennett actually reminds me of my mom, which seems like a really mean thing to say. If my mom heard me say that, she would be like hella, hella offended. But here's
the thing. Hi, Casey's mom.
I'm going to tell her not to listen to this episode, even though she loves Jane Austen. My mom like cares so much, and my mom loves romance. Like, my mom, she loves romance novels. She loves the idea of being settled and like safe and like finding love with someone. Like, she's very traditional minded in that way. And I know that like she really, really wants me and my sisters to settle down. And yes, like partly because we're daughters, like not that we can't take care of ourselves, but just so she knows like there is someone else out there who is like can serve as like a support for us. And she can be a little annoying about getting that goal accomplished. She can be a little pushy. One time she told me the only reason that she works out is so that she can be a fun grandma.
Hey, one time my mom saw a guy walking into a gym across the parking lot. She goes, I didn't see a ring on his finger.
Yeah, she sends me TikToks of random like 30-year-old men. And she's like, maybe you can date him. She's a little off the hinges.
Or do your mom give you like deadlines of when they want grandkids? Like, by 25, you need to have one baby popped out.
Oh, well, thank goodness I have a sister who's married, so a little pressure off me, but good luck, guys.
Yeah. Anyway, so this is my really roundabout way of saying, I feel like I do have a little bit of a soft spot for Mrs. Bennett because I understand the place that she comes from, because a lot of her pushing and her hysteria like reminds me of my mom, and like knowing that it just comes from a genuine place of like wanting us to like have and receive love and be safe. That being said, Mrs. Bennett definitely takes it to a degree that is hard to support at times. Her treatment of Lydia to me is actually more unforgivable than her dad's treatment, because she completely aids, abets, and supports her and does not give her any realistic lessons, which obviously Mr. Bennett could do as well, but like as a woman in society, you'd think she would be a little bit more on top of that. So yeah, that's my Mrs. Bennett review. Complicated character, I agree, but I still like love her at the end of it.
I totally agree, she's more complicit for the Lydia situation than Mr. Bennett, for
sure. He also only promotes Jane as being the pretty one.
Yeah.
So that does irritate me also.
Yeah. So next question.
I want to get back to the love. You know, we've covered familial love. Casey got it. So first impressions, first meeting between Darcy and Elizabeth, and she overheard him saying that, you know, she was all right, but nothing special. So what would you do after that first impression?
I'd do what she did, honestly. I'm very not okay with that sort of slander.
Yeah, I have some pride to contend with. Like, I will not be kind in the face of that sort of criticism.
I don't know if I would end up marrying him one day.
Be hard.
That is one of the pills to swallow. That's like hard for me a little bit. Is like, which Elizabeth wasn't necessarily a huge fan of his looks in the beginning either, which kind of helps equalize it. But I was like, damn, I would be thinking that in the back of my head forever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe that's why I don't like that she changes her mind necessarily, is because I'm maybe less forgiving than her.
I can see that. Yeah.
The most forgiving person in the whole book, Charlotte Lucas.
I just don't get it. I don't get her choice. Yeah, I get it. I totally, like, I agree with what y'all said about, like, devil's advocating my least favorite character thing. I get it. But I guess as, like, me personally, when I put myself in her shoes, I'm just, like, slapping her silly, like, what you doing? He's gross. He's weird. He is a pastor, deacon, whatever it is. He's just strange, and you're forced to sit in church every Sunday and listen to him talk. Like, that's not fun. I think
that's the time period difference. Is luckily, we, despite having the desire maybe to find someone we love and settle down with, we still value our happiness as women above that. From the, I think at least us three do, but I think most women do value happiness over security. And I think that's a nice change.
Yeah.
Me too. Because in Charlotte's situation, like, I really don't know what I would have done. Because as we discussed, like, I understand and respect her decision, but he was just so annoying. Like, I'm like, look, I will settle for, like, an ugly, like, middle of the road, okay, dude. But I don't know that I can do someone who is that aggravating. Like,
he's just, like, repulsive.
Yeah. Yes. Like, he mansplains to the mansplaining maximum. Like, it's just, you can't.
Yeah.
Also, have you noticed the same character is present in Emma? That yep. would be
the exact. You have to think that Austin definitely.
Yeah,
you would definitely have to think Austin, like, definitely didn't appreciate one man in her life that was in the clergy.
Yeah,
which is one of my other favorite things to think about with Jane Austen, is she always names, like, the prettiest, like, best, well-mannered characters Jane.
Yeah,
the same. So she's definitely imitating life to her art there.
Oh, for sure.
So how did you guys feel about Mr. Darcy's first and very controversial and very awkward proposal?
See, it's back to my point about she changes her mind because he straight up insults her during the whole proposal. Not saying that might not also get me a little fired up and interested, but, like,
I don't see, he doesn't,
kind of unforgivable insults.
I mean, so I don't think he's insulting, like, her character. He's insulting her position in society and her family, which is not more forgivable, but it, like, I would feel less mad about that than I would if he was like, you're ugly, you're gross, marry me. But instead, he's just,
you're poor and I hate your family, but I guess I'll tolerate it for you.
Because it's not that forgivable, but I
ruined your sister's chances of marriage.
Well, he didn't lead with that.
One other person in your family I liked.
Yeah, she rebuked him on that. He didn't lead with
that. Oh, yeah. No, I like her response to the proposal.
Yes.
Her response is the best part.
What makes the first proposal forgivable to me is, again, the time period, just because Elizabeth knows her family sucks. Like, there's no way she doesn't, like, in her heart, like, know that to be true. Like, there are points in the book when she admits it. So again, not that I think it's really acceptable for, like, Mr. Darcy to speak to her that way, especially not when he's trying to propose marriage, but I'm like, but was anything he said, like, not true? Like, no. And, like, that stuff was really important during that time period. But like y'all said, her clapback, another one of the highlights of the book.
Oh yeah. And it's just in cinema, it's been so good. Like in the rain scene, 2005.
Right. Somehow it's really hot that he's insulting her.
I know.
Even though he's not necessarily hot in the movie. It's just hot that he's insulting her in the rain passionately.
It's the rain. It's the rain. Rain scenes are just...
It's like cool. They knew what they were doing.
Sure. It's just like, ugh, I'm going to ignore the fact that he just said mean stuff.
Yeah. I mean, and like I said, you know, after that encounter, I'd probably be like, man, he was harsh. I was harsh, but now I'm interested. Like, I think that would have... Who wouldn't be interested after that?
Yeah, I mean, he is, like, super rich. Like, who among us is strong enough to, like, resist
the pull? He's her equal. He's not a sugar daddy. You know?
And it would, maybe it's because we're all three, like, a little bit argumentative, is you love it when someone can give it back.
Mm-hmm. Right, I think that's why we all like Elizabeth so much, because we all three are a little bit tell it how it is, sarcastic.
You know? Argumentative.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I've been called blunt, too honest. Yes.
I've been called bitchy, but that works too.
Yeah, or cold. That's a good one.
Good one.
So, Caitlin's favorite topic. When exactly do Elizabeth's feelings for Mr. Darcy change?
I think it's right there, the proposal.
I think she comes
out from it. Well, and like, I feel like that's part of what I mean as the proposal, is like the aftermath right there. She comes out of the proposal and hears his explanation and she's like, ooh, man, he's great.
Yeah. I'll second the letter. I think that's the moment I'd point to. But I don't think she realizes she's in love with him until she's like at his mansion though. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Staring at his thoughts or whatever.
Yeah, because she actively tries to avoid it.
Mm-hmm. Like, real hard.
Yeah.
And honestly, meeting his sister, I think, was a nice little catalyst to just grease the wheels on that.
Yeah.
Love Georgiana.
Yeah, all these things that, like, reflect the good humanity, like, nice traits of him really, yeah, sped that.
I guess that's out. The point is he's locked away that side of him until mm-hmm. the letter. And yeah. Then
yeah, because he didn't have
to know him until then.
Yeah, he didn't have to tell her all that stuff. Like, he could have just left it at the proposal, but the fact that he like wrote up.
Marry her? Shouldn't they like share their stuff?
That's it's awesome. A different time, Kate.
I know. And, like, my judgment comes from 2022, you know?
I get your judgment. Totally fair. You want to know more about your prospective partner. But I think. He didn't have to tell her all that stuff, especially after she insulted him essentially and he insulted her, but he went into great detail about a part of his life that he doesn't tell people about Wickham for a reason, and the people around him don't know about the whole situation, but he's willing to tell her like what happened with Georgiana and trust her with that secret. So I think that's when the cogs start turning in her head about him.
Now to my favorite question, my second favorite question. Mr. Darcy is still kind of held as this like ideal man, ideal romantic lead. What's the appeal? Why is he still so lovable to 21st century women?
I think it's what I said in the beginning. He's not Prince Charming. He's like a real dude.
Yeah. I also think it is that like, he has this like really deep, soft side to him. Like, I do think it's so attractive, especially now that like we're having all these like societal conversations about like men not having emotions and like not being in touch with that part of themselves. You know, it's like very sweet that he can like care so deeply about the people in his lives and like the letter, like be so vulnerable about it.
Yeah.
And he does nice things with his money. Like, he mm-hmm. helps Elizabeth's family out without wanting any credit. And, like, his house is open to visitors. And, like, just, like, not overtly, like, you know, giving to charities and be like, yeah, hey, look at me. But he's just, like, using his position in that time period well.
Yeah. He's a mm-hmm. true gentleman, which is few and far between in my experience personally. And he's super chivalrous. Like, that's, he's not your Prince Charming, but he has Prince Charming characteristics that you like without being fake. So like y'all have said, it's just, he still appeals today because it's something we want more men to be.
Yeah.
I'll draw you a comparison. It's like in Harry Potter, okay? Snape, you want to hate him the whole time, and then you find out these deep, meaningful parts of him, and you're like, oh my gosh, he's like the best.
The best. You're right. That is a really good comparison.
Yeah.
I feel like Snape is like Mr. Darcy, but without like all the romance and stuff.
Yeah. I think it is also that like Mr. Darcy loves Elizabeth for being his equal, which is hard to find, I would say, still,
especially in that time period. Yeah
So yeah, hashtag love. Plus he got all that money.
Yeah,
Casey's like, in want of a sugar daddy.
Loved.
Yeah, if you have an advanced degree, hit me up. I'm totally kidding.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Okay, so despite how I've played devil's advocate this whole time about changing of minds and getting to know each other, you know, it's a time period thing, I know. So all of that aside, how do we feel about the ending between Mr. Darcy and Elizabeth? Is it what you wanted? Is it what you expected? I feel like I expected it, but I'm glad it happened still. Like, I didn't mind that I predicted it.
I'm going to take a very hot take. The movie was better than the book ending.
Okay.
So you're talking about the Keira Knightley version.
Mm-hmm.
The movie had a more dramatic ending than the book.
Mm-hmm.
But if you read Jane Austen, you know, they can't just have like a makeout sesh in the rain in the 1810.
They don't. So,
they don't.
They don't kiss until they're married.
Anyway, the whole dramatic scene at the end. I love the ending in the book. I will like half agree with you though.
It's just because the proposal is underwhelming in the book. Like, it's just on a walk. He proposes. Yeah. She says yes. But in the movie, it's like the morning sun coming up. And he's like, what was it?
So I love sleep. So they like came.
Yeah.
Found each other in the dawn hour.
Yeah. He's like, I ardently love you.
Yeah. Or, like, that, you know, like irrevocably, irretrievably, yeah, I'm in love with you.
Body kind of. And soul.
Bewitched, yeah. Body and soul. Yeah.
Yes. That's it. So good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I love, correct me if I'm wrong, it's been a while. I'm a little rusty on the book itself, but the movie, like in the end, when he's like, what should I call you in this scenario and in this smart scenario? And how about when I'm mad at you? Should I call you Mrs. Darcy? And she's like, no, call me only when you are so, so, so happy. And he's like, okay, Mrs. Darcy. Like,
so sweet.
So good. And it's still their like witty banter, but like in such a romantic way.
Yeah, I do. I do think the ending of Pride and Prejudice is one of the reasons why I ultimately like Emma better, but I still like it. I'll still support it, even though it's not hashtag drama.
So well, what we're hearing is we might have to do an Emma episode.
I think so.
Pride and Prejudice, I'm going to put this out there. Usually if someone's like, what is your favorite book of all time? This is what I will say.
Okay.
So like I am a big stan.
It's top five. It's top five for me.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's top five for me as well, I would say. But now that we've kind of wrapped up discussion, do you guys have any romance recommendations that you think fellow Jane Austenites would like?
You already said Emma, which I would recommend.
I mean, that's the best comparison. They're super similar, mm-hmm. yet not.
Yes. I would also make a case for Northanger Abbey because I think it's her most underrated book.
I also agree.
It is actually has my favorite male protagonist of hers. And it's very funny. So
it's really quick. I read it in 2 days, actually. It's one of her quicker novels.
It is.
I'm going to make another plug for Pride and Prejudice and Zombies just because I feel like it's almost like a Jane Austen cult classic at this point without being, like, it's just so, if you're a Jane Austen fan, it's so funny.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm also going to make a other platform Pride and Prejudice recommendation. It's called The Lizzie Bennet Diaries, and it's a YouTube web series where it's like as if it was set in modern times, and she goes through like these 10-minute updates of daily life as Elizabeth Bennet and as like the series progresses, which it's long, it takes a while, but it's really inventive and cool. I really liked it, especially like I think I watched it right after I read the book. And that was in like high school. So that was, I really liked it.
And right, also, you two have watched Bridgerton. So like, what's there?
Yes.
Bridgerton is if you want spicier Regency.
Yes. You want like the true modern remix, like not back to the source.
Yeah. I will say though, the books are not it. My personal opinion. I've read two of them. I read book two and book three for some reason. I've read them really out of order. I just didn't want to read Daphne and Simon because I'd already seen it. And I wanted to get a preview of season two, which I was okay with the second book. The third book lost me a bit.
Mm-hmm. Pitched for another classic, Jane Eyre. If you like Jane Austen, you'll love Jane Eyre.
Jane Eyre borders on the weird.
At the end
things get bizarre.
One of the things I really like about this whole era of literature is that it will be like have some of the dullest chapters you'll ever read in your life. Like it's all about the talking, as we've said, and so much of life is so mundane and regular, but then there's this whole genre of the time period that takes things just like you'll just be reading a normal book and then it's just like like cuts you off like hard left. So Jane Eyre is like that, but it's also a very empowering story about
ahead of its time also. Mm-hmm. I think this discussion is making me realize I don't read many romances, so like if anyone has any romance recommendations, it's a genre I think I don't read much.
Well, if you want modern romance, I have a recommendation that I'm sure they both already know I'm going to say. The Love Hypothesis. Yeah. Really good.
I'm going to say Book Lovers.
No, I preferred Love Hypothesis.
Okay.
Are you know, okay. So this is sort of an off-kilter, or not an off-kilter. I think it's a good recommendation, but I read it in high school, but it was one of my favorite romances ever. It's called Eleanor and Park. And it's by Rainbow Rowell, who's written some other stuff, which got mixed reviews, but I never read any of her other books. But anyway, it's two main characters who are like dorky and nerdy and kind of find romance together. So if you like that sort of quirky main character vibe.
There's our recommendations. If you wanna hop on the Jane Austen, Bridgerton, Regency era train, like I said, if you've got good romance novels, I don't think any of us read that very much.
We'd love some.
Yeah. So if you want to connect with us, send us recs, give your opinion. We're Busy Girls Pod on most of our social media. And then on Goodreads, you can join the Busy Girls Book Club podcast, like book club on Goodreads, and join our discussions. And you can email us, busygirlspod@gmail.com. So send us those recs. We still have a few more episodes lined up, but of course we want to know what you're interested in because we're trying to give you a gap in your schedule to tell you how much time you have to read this book. Is it worth it?
So yeah, thanks for tuning in. I'm Casey.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Catherine. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.